we show transparency. We want to be transparent. And in the end, if a client can choose between a non-transparent product somewhere from Asia or a transparent product that he knows where it comes from, how it's made, and he can be sure that it's really certified and it's an okay product, it will make the decision to buy that product. And yes, in cases it will be more expensive, but in the long run, it will help you to make the transition, and it also it will help you to comply with the law.
Herzlich willkommen bei Fair Fashion Talk, dem Podcast, der sich nicht nur mit nachhaltiger Mode und der Zukunft der Modeindustrie beschäftigt, sondern auch spannende Themen rund um andere nachhaltige Produkte und Innovationen beleuchtet, die unsere Welt ein Stück besser machen. Ich bin Sabine Paulsen, dein Host, und seit 2021 lade ich dich ein, mit mir auf eine Reise zu mehr Bewusstsein und Verantwortung zu gehen. In diesem Podcast sprechen wir unter anderem über die Herausforderungen, Entwicklungen und Chancen der Modebranche, stellen inspirierende Projekte vor und zeigen, wie wir durch bewusste Kaufentscheidungen einen Unterschied machen können. Ganz gleich, ob du gerade erst in das Thema einsteigst oder schon ein echter Profi bist, hier gibt es interessante Einblicke und neue Perspektiven. Freue dich auf intensive Gespräche mit Expertinnen und faszinierende Geschichten und lass uns gemeinsam einen Blick auf die Mode von morgen werfen. Fair, nachhaltiger und verantwortungsbewusster. Mein Ziel ist es, dich zu inspirieren, zu motivieren und dir wertvolle Impulse zu geben. Auch in dieser Folge begrüße ich ein Mitglied von Maxtex, Cibotex aus den Niederlanden. Da unser Gespräch mit meinem heutigen Gast auf Englisch stattfand, wurde die Episode vollständig in englischer Sprache aufgenommen. Ich spreche mit Eli Flessing, der uns spannende Einblicke in die Entstehungsgeschichte von Cibotex gibt und erläutert, mit welcher Vision das Unternehmen angetreten ist. Schon zu Beginn unseres Austauschs wird deutlich, dass lineare Geschäftsmodelle längst an ihre Grenzen gestoßen sind. Die Zukunft gehört kreislauffähigen, ressourcenschonenden und verantwortungsvollen Geschäftsmodellen. Angesichts der verschärften Abfallproblematik und der enormen Überproduktion von Textilien braucht es dringend neue Lösungen. Lösungen, die auf Zusammenarbeit statt auf Konkurrenz setzen. Eli erklärt, wie Cibotex genau hier ansetzt. Wir erfahren, welche Prozesse nötig sind, um gebrauchte Textilien in den Kreislauf zurückzuführen, welche Materialarten sich besonders gut fürs Recycling eignen und welche innovativen Pilotprojekte bereits erfolgreich umgesetzt wurden. Einige dieser Projekte zeigen eindrucksvoll, welches Potenzial recycelte Materialien für die Textilindustrie bieten. In den Niederlanden und in Frankreich ist die sogenannte EPR, die erweiterte Herstellerverantwortung, bereits gesetzlich verankert. Doch auch andere EU-Mitgliedstaaten werden sich zeitnah mit der Einführung effizienter Systeme auseinandersetzen müssen. Warum also das Rad neu erfinden, wenn Cibotex mit seinem kooperativen Ansatz vielleicht sogar als Blaupause für andere Länder dienen kann? Diese Episode zeigt einmal mehr: Die Transformation der Textilbranche ist in vollem Gange und Cibotex trägt einen wichtigen Teil dazu bei. Viel Spaß damit!
Hi, Eli. Good morning and welcome you to my podcast, Fair Fashion Talk. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you, Sabine. Good to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
And, yeah, thanks a lot. So we already discussed it's the first time for you to make a podcast. And yes. For me, it's the first time in English. So let's see how it will work out. So, at the beginning, I would like to suggest that you are going to introduce yourself a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, my name is Eli Flessing. And I work for an organization called Cibotex that started in the Netherlands. Cibotex is aimed at making the textile industry more circular. That is was set up, I think, three or four years ago, by a number of laundry companies who saw that a lot of very good textiles were going to waste in landfills, incineration, or just the junkyard. And they had a lot of end-of-life textiles, and they wanted to do something with it. And the most important thing they found out, they have to work together in this industry. So from this idea of collaboration in collecting end-of-life textiles, we expanded it into collaboration in a number of fields. And we started with four or five laundries in the beginning. And Cibotex has grown since to about 50 or 60 members today. So it's the idea is very good, and it's catching on, not only in textiles, but in many fields. And within textiles, I should mention, Cibutex is especially focused on business textiles. And that is different from consumer textiles or fashion that you hear a lot of in the news. And the main textile volumes in the world are fashion volumes. But business textiles is a huge volume as well, with a high probability of good recycling. I can talk more about that later. Yeah. So I sit here for Cibutex today.
Yeah, that's great. And yeah, Cibutex is also a MaxTex member. And yeah, this the last few months I had offered the podcast episode for the MaxTex members. And I'm really happy that you're here now, because this is now a another part of the supply chain, actually, the recycling part. So usually I'm talking to brands who are producing products, but you are almost at the end of life of the supply chain, I would say, isn't it?
Yes, we that's where we started. We with textile service companies, I should say, they wanted to do something with their end-of-life textiles. It's the end of the life cycle. But since it's called a life cycle, we rather talk about a cycle or circle of life instead of maintaining a linear industry. Usually textiles are produced and used and discarded in a linear way. They're made with a lot of natural resources, then used, and at the end of the life, they're just thrown away. It's a linear process that is costing the world a lot. And what we're trying to do in Cibutex, so we jumped in at the end of this life cycle, sent these textiles back into production again. So that requires adaptation in production, in usage, in customer experience, in expectations, all along the circle. And the funny thing about a cycle, it's a circle, so there's not really a beginning or an end. It could continue forever, if done properly.
This sounds like a quite easy and good idea, but it's very complex, I think, the process. So as I've learned from the last years, that you always have to think about, okay, which kind of composition does the product have? Do I have a monomaterial, or is there elastane inside? And especially as you said, that you're focused on business clothes or business textiles. There, I think, is also a lot of polyester inside because of the longevity. And this is one part. And I think, okay, also the style and the design of the product is very important. So can you just let us or give some insights about which kind of products you mainly collect and where you look for, or just... I said, okay, this part or this textile is not usable, this one is perfect, and this one may be.
Yeah. Well, perfect is hard to say, but a lot of our members in the business textile industry work for hospitality industry. That is hotels, restaurants, lounges of sort. And they have a lot of linen that is just flat sheets. Tablecloth, bed linen, pillow covers, you name it. It's very simple. It's usually products with no buttons, no zippers, no hard parts, as they call it. Mm-hmm. And they're mono materials, usually 100% cotton. And another thing is that another product is, for example, hospital uniforms. That is used in operation rooms or just by the caretakers in the hospital. And they use a lot of those, you know, the green and blue aprons that they wear. They're containers full coming out there every day from hospitals. And there's an excellent recycling percentage for that, because they're very simple materials. They're easy to make. They're easy to recycle completely. So those are materials that are very good for recycling. In contrast to a lot of fashion products, like you mentioned, fashion is spread out through society. Everybody has a little bit. And business textiles are concentrated in one spot, either the hospital or the laundry company, a construction company, that kind of places. So we already have the volumes concentrated in one place. And when the laundry companies, the textile service companies, treat them, it's clean, washed, and ready to be reused. And when you have consumer textiles, you have to create an entire system of collecting them, which we have in the Netherlands, but it's difficult. It is not very clean. And the stuff you get is a mix of everything. So it's very, very difficult to get the fibers back from that and create new clothing from it. So business textiles offer a far better chance to do that. Another thing is that you can we consider is advertising on the road, on billboards, in train stations that are used on mobile canvases, that rolling systems. They use endless amounts of polyester fabric to print the advertisement on. And when it's done, especially the big events with music or whatever, cultural events, the background is used with canvases of polyester. And when the event is over, they throw it all away. And we can very well recycle those materials, especially
They are printed. I think they are printed.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. So this you can recycle as well anyway.
If they use the right printing ink in the beginning. So it's, like I said, it's a cycle. And all parts of the cycle have to cooperate.
Yeah.
So it starts with when you have a product, it should be eco-designed, as they call it. So design with recycling in mind. So be aware that after your product is used, we want to take it apart and use it again. And this design principle of eco-design applies to any field of design, if it's cars, bicycles, oil tankers, home appliances, everything, mobile phones. Make them in a way so that we can take them apart and use the parts again. And it applies to textile as well.
Yeah, sure. And do you train those companies maybe already in advance? Because the eco design regulation is not fixed yet, finally.
No.
So do you inform them and just say, okay, listen, when you are going to make this kind of banner, then please kindly think about the chemicals, the print colors, what you're going to use. So do you inform them already?
Yeah, because in Cibutex we have we started with to organize the collecting of textiles, and for that we now have a software product, a portal for our members, where they can enter the fabrics that they want to offer for recycling. So that helps to recycle it, but it also helps the registration and the reporting of those textiles becoming more and more important. You have to prove that you have recycled a certain percentage of all the kilos you put on the market. That's the regulation in the Netherlands already in power, also in France, and Germany will no doubt follow soon, same as Belgium. These regulations are the transition to a circular economy, so it will happen sooner or later in all these countries. So we create a portal for that. Another thing that Cibutex has started is a small academy to exchange information, to educate our members about recycling, how to get started in sustainability. All these topics, we have an academy and we are slowly developing different courses, either half an hour online or 5 days in your company. We can accommodate that and help you to train your staff, your management team, or your suppliers. You can invite them. What is the best way to go if you want to be more sustainable and want to make the transition to a circular industry? So yeah, that is part of what we do also. Okay. Educate and inform, we call
it. Yeah, that's good. And there is, I think the circle will be closed now here as well when we talk about collaboration, because this is also some kind of important work inside the collaboration, I think. And on your website, I think there's the motto mentioned circularity through cooperation. So this is really the big goal or the big target from Cibotex, I think.
It is, absolutely. Cooperation is key. No matter how big your company is, and some of our members are huge companies with a lot of laundries across Europe even. But still, like I said about the eco design, that is a good concept that applies to the textile industry as well. You have to think what happens next, what happens next, what happens next with your products. And do not only concern yourself with what happens on your little island in the circle of the product. And that is difficult for people to look beyond the horizon. And that's why you have to partner up.
Yeah, sorry. I think especially for the designers as well. So they already need to start at the beginning to think about, okay, I'm going to create my product. Mm-hmm. So I think, and for the business textiles, it's, I would say, a little bit easier than for the fashion textiles, because there are already some kind of regulation, and it's not that kind of fancy like the fashion industry is. No. So and I think a lot of companies already working in this direction of circular economy anyway. So as you already said at the beginning, this is the goal which we need all to follow up, to have a circular economy instead of linear modules, for sure.
Yeah, and it's, if we explain what Cibotex does to companies or people who do not know, we always start with the linear to circular comparison, and everybody understands that. That is what everybody feels is the right direction. Yes, of course. If we keep on burning oil and using resources and just dumping it, and we literally dump our textiles far away, we pick a country in South America, and then we fill it with what we don't need anymore, or we send it to Africa, and which is, of course, a ridiculous way of thinking.
Absolutely. That
it's almost how little children act. If you don't see it, it doesn't exist. Well, that's far from true, as we all know. And we try to face the problems, and we try to solve them step by step.
Ili, can you just let us know how the process from the beginning to the end is working? Give us some idea for the listeners, so to understand, okay, the goods will be collected from your side, mm-hmm. and then what will be the next steps?
Yeah.
Until maybe a new product will be done out.
Yeah. it is a little bit different for each product. We also try to send products away for I'm not sure, it's called remanufacturing. So we don't take them apart. For example, bed sheets, as you can imagine, they may be damaged on the edges or be soiled, and then we can't use them in the hotel anymore. But the main part, 90% of it, is perfect. So we can send it off to a studio where they make something else from it. We do that as well.
Okay, so then it will be more upcycling than with the bed linen. So they make some new textiles out of it then.
Yeah. We did an interesting project with our partner in Denmark to make a chef's jacket for the cook in a restaurant out of discarded bed linen.
Ah, okay.
Worked very well. And but basically, we collect the fabrics, the end-of-life textiles, in the laundry companies, and we collect it and we bring it to a recycling company. Recycling can be done two ways: mechanically, that is just tearing it apart, just ripping it to shreds, literally, and then shred it all the way down to fibers. And when you're down to fibers, you can use them to spin it again, to spin new fibers from it, new yarn. And when you have new yarn, you can make new fabric, to weave it into a fabric. And from the fabric, you can make your product, your new bed linen, your pillow covers, what have you. And that can be used again. And then once it reaches its end of life status, it can go back into the same cycle. Problem with some materials is that the fibers will shorten over time. Mm-hmm. So they become less and less the quality is less and less to use them again. So you always have to mix in virgin material, so that's new material, to use 100
keep the quality, right? Yeah.
To be able to spin and weave new fabrics.
Okay.
But it's, you know, we about a year ago we started a project to see if we could make a kitchen towel, a very ordinary product that you have in every kitchen, but it's a heavy use product. It's used and washed every day in restaurants and such. And we tried to make one using 50% recycled content in it. So this product is made of cotton and a part is polyester. And we wanted the half of the material used to be recycled. And after some testing, we did that. And the next step was to make this project also commercially viable. So we can make a few hundred like a pilot. Okay, and it works. But then we had a new test run and we made about 20,000 of them. And we supplied them to our members and said, put this in your catalog, sell this to the market. So that's what's happening now. And that's slowly picking up traction.
Yeah, but I think this is quite normal. So in general, sustainability is a process. And especially this kind of technology option, I think you need some kind of first time testing, see how it looks like, and then you're growing and raise it more and more. So I think this is normal that it will go slowly. I think otherwise it wouldn't work.
No, it always goes slow because you always have you do part of the process, you evaluate, I think, oh, this could be done better or differently. Sure. And we in Cibitex, we do not own any of the companies that are part of us. So all the pilot projects that we organize or facilitate are owned by the companies who actually do the project. So to be completely clear about our commercial objectives, there are none. We do not intend to be a commercial producer of any product, but we want to help our members to make their business more sustainable and more circular by developing this kind of product.
And you offering the connections between
the we offer the connections and network, we organize the collaboration because it's, you know, it's often you're talking to companies who are normally competing together in the same market. And now you say, okay, let's sit together and let's make this product. But it works wonderfully well. People are willing. Once they have seen the full circle and the future of their industry, they are willing to cooperate. They see it's necessary and they have to get on board sooner or later.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think there's no need to have the fear that somebody is grabbing up your business because there are so many textiles outside. So there's a lot of for everybody available. So I think everybody will have his own business with this.
Yes, definitely. And our members all have their own businesses, usually that are localized. They're geographically defined because you have to transport, you have to take back and forth your products. But still, some of the members are very large, have a lot of branches across Netherlands and Germany mainly, but also in other countries. We even have one member in Australia. We don't go there to pick up his his textiles. No, but this shows that the vision and the objective of Cibutex is appealing to textile companies, and they want to be part of it. And also, the people in Australia, we say to them, the way Cibutex is operating and the way Cibutex is organizing this cycle can be copied to other countries as well.
For example, it's like a blueprint. Isn't it?
So, yes.
Yeah. And I think the problem is for some companies why they didn't start it yet, because they don't know where to start and with whom. So, and now they have already some framework, I would say, like Cibutex, and know, okay, there I can get some other partners, there I get the knowledge and can see how this works on. Yeah. And, Eli, do you have also the option that or the possibility to track the supply chain as well? You know, in generally, when you're producing a product, you also need to deliver the information about, okay, from the ginner, about the spinning mill, the weaving mill, and then the production mill, and so on. Do you also can make this with your product that you can say, okay, we will have later on the supply chain for with the recycler and then the, also the spinning mill and so on and so on?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, okay. one of our members is specialized in that. This to make a digital trace of your product, and we involve them in this the kitchen towel project I just mentioned. We also had it traced by them, so you can actually see there's a little I think barcode on the label, and then you can see where the cotton was grown that we used, and where all the materials come from, where they were put together, all the way to the end. To the manufacturer, and you still need all the data to be entered into this system. But it's becoming more and more mandatory for products. It's all integrated in the digital product passport, of course, that is coming up. Yeah,
But then it's more complicated for you. I was just thinking about because sometimes you have two supply chains. You have the virgin supply chain, which you have to mix with the recycle supply chain. So you have, double supply chain information to offer. Or
it's just you source materials from different sources. So there's a little arrow in maybe the recycling plant in Frankfurt, where our recycled materials come from. There's another sign in an importer in Rotterdam who imports the cotton, and he can see he buys it where he buys it. And of course, if we buy natural virgin materials, we make sure they're all certified. There's a lot of certifications out there, but we know which ones are reliable. So then we make sure that the process that is behind it, albeit a virgin product, we still want the workers to be fairly paid, etc., for their work. But all the data is entered in the website that is behind this little QR code, and you can actually see a world map with dots on it where your product comes from. It's very good. I don't know if people will really follow the trace. It's nice to do, but the main thing is we show transparency. We want to be transparent. And in the end, if a client can choose between a non-transparent product somewhere from Asia or a transparent product that he knows where it comes from, how it's made, and he can be sure that it's really certified and it's an okay product, it will make the decision to buy that product. And yes, in cases it will be more expensive, but in the long run, it will help you to make the transition. And it also, it will help you to comply with the law. Yeah. We talked about that earlier.
Absolutely. And I also doubt that most of the consumers or people will have a look on the transparency or on the QR code and will check how the supply chain will look like. But I think we all need this to make some comparison between the products. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you have no information about this. And also, only with data of a product, you're also able to change something. Without any data, which you will get to the life cycle analysis, you are really not able to improve the product as well. So I think this is really necessary, although most of the people won't check it. But nobody knows. Maybe the people will be interested in.
Yeah, but it's like you just mentioned the life cycle analysis. We also had that done, which is different than a material trace. The life cycle analysis analyzes if this product, what is the impact of this product, and compare it to a regular non-recycled product. And then you can see the difference, which is expressed in energy, water, and emissions. So how much energy do we save? How much water usage can we reduce? And how much less emissions of both greenhouse gases, but also pesticides and other chemicals into the environment? And these reports are very, it's a very technical matter, but these institutions have a method of making this analysis and say, okay, if we make a certain amount of this kitchen towel material, we can calculate how much energy we save, etc. And this LCA life cycle analysis is also a very important document that goes with the product. Ideally, in the future, we would like to combine this life cycle analysis with the material trace, the product trace. So you can see where it comes from and you can see what impact a product has. And that's one of the things we're still working on at the moment.
Yeah, but you already seem to be like a front runner in this, because a lot of companies have problems at first to find the correct service provider who can help to collect all the data and at least to collect those data, mm-hmm. especially scope 3 from the suppliers. The data are almost mostly not really available. So this is still a big challenge. And I think that we still need some time to, on the one hand, to convince the suppliers as well to provide those data and to make it clear for which purpose are those data. And if every brand who's working in a specific factory is asking for those data, then it's absolutely standardized and the company knows, okay, this is normal, I will give the data. But if there's only one company or brand who's asking for it, then it's weird for them. And then they're saying, okay, no, sorry for that.
Yeah.
I can't do this. So I think it needs to become a normal activity, actually, also.
It should be. Yeah. And of course, in the beginning, companies are hesitant. They don't want to be a front runner because it's a risk. Because being a front runner it's uncertain where it will end and if you take the right direction. And of course, we help our members to take that position and kind of lower the risk for them and turn the risk into an advantage. Our big communicative concept of being sustainable is that turn sustainability into an advantage for your company. Many people look at it as a burden, something you have to do. It will cost you money, it will cost you hours.
I know all these sentences.
Yeah, and we say, well, you're doing the right thing. So turn that into a USP and include that in your communication. And you can be very straightforward about that. You're not covering up other bit. You're not greenwashing your product. You are actually working on a better future and a better world. Those are big words, but it's actually what you're doing. And I think that's why this change will in some way keep on manifesting itself. And it will keep on catching other companies, other countries to join the right side of... Not the dark side. To stay in that metaphor.
Yeah, for sure. And it might be that at the beginning you have to invest in sustainability processes or products. This might be, but at the end, I'm quite sure that you will have the most benefit of it, not only for not only money wise, but also company wise. And do you have or could you already provide to your partners any good examples where you could show, okay, look, this product has this and this CO2 emission before and afterwards we have this and this information about this and the costs could be lower like this, so because the economical side is always also important. So could you already show these kind of data to give a good example that it's worthwhile to step in this part forward?
Yeah, definitely. Like I mentioned, the kitchen towel is one product that we even took to a further production cycle in higher volumes. But we've been working on hospital ware in the same fashion for an actual hospital and or a chain of hospitals in Germany for whom we produced operation gowns and polo shirts and all the uniforms for the personnel from recycled material. We did an LCA for that. for that material. And as with the kitchen towel, the results were predictably good. Of course, you save energy and resources when you do it this way. And the end result looked fine, because the client is always also looking at, is the result satisfactory? Does it look good? Does it feel good? And that's also what we try to establish. So the quality will be the same, but the burden it you put on the world, the impact you make with while making it, and especially when it's the end of life time, is less. And that is becoming more and more important in the decision making for many people. So they ask for proof, and we have a number of pilot products and also the mass produced kitchen towel for which we have data to support these statements. We're not just claiming it. We can prove it from very respected institutions that make these calculations. We don't do it ourselves, of course, but...
No.
We send it out and they...
You're really not able to this. So
No. And we shouldn't do it.
Complex topic. Yeah. And there are already a lot of service providers who are offering this kind of life cycle analysis. So this helps really to provide data, because it's always, the discussion is always about the data. I think. And did you already have some kind of success stories in your partner or in your partnership network of companies who said, okay, we are going to join Cibotex, but really don't know what we should do here? So maybe all these pilot projects or good examples could change their sustainability strategy. So was there somebody who really turned to the good side of life?
Yeah. Well, I think all the companies that joined Cibotex after it was founded have in a way turned. But in most of these companies, the question was not so much if they were going to be more circular, but how and when. So we try to answer that question. If companies really do not wish to become circular and want to stick to the old linear process, we don't really try to convince them. In time, they will turn. We are absolutely sure. There will be the regulations will be put in effect, and they will have to comply, and they will have to change the way they operate. If not now, then tomorrow. And there's plenty of companies who really want to do what we call the right thing, who support the vision of Cibotex, this circularity transition, and working together in that vision. And we, of course, we visit a lot of trade fairs in especially Germany, Sweden, Netherlands, everywhere. And we talk to a lot of people there. And we meet, I must say, a lot of people who say, okay, I have a company in some country and I have 5 laundries, but I really want to change the way we operate. Where do I start? And that's what I would call a success story. We can now give them, okay, we can have become a member and you can have this information and that course, and we come and we have a lecture for you. We have a starter kit as a product of our academy. Another thing that we help our members with is to comply with the law, especially Netherlands. The EPR law is, of course, it's a very complex and difficult law. Who is subjected to it? Who is not? And there are special companies, organizations have been created. To help companies comply to this law, because it's very difficult for the textile companies themselves to do it. We have investigated the organizations that do that and help our members to join one of them. So, okay, this is a good one because they have a good, clear vision on business textiles as well. Because we think for business textiles, we should have a little bit different rules in this EPR. The EPR, for example, wants you to reuse a certain percentage of your recycled materials. It basically, you have to take back or organize the take back of a certain percentage of your materials, And of those, you have to recycle a part and reuse a part, like in vintage or secondhand or whatever. For business textiles, this is absolutely impossible and also forbidden if you look at the hospitals. Hospitals will not allow you to reuse these operation clothing. They want you to recycle them. So business textiles need a little bit different rules. Now, we help to negotiate those different rules. That's why we have a lot of members that are not in the business, in the textile industry themselves, but are in representative associations. There's one in Netherlands. There's a big one in Germany, DTV. There's a big one in Europe, ESTA. So we are in close contact with them, and we represent the interests of the business textile industry, not the interest in an economic sense. We are not there to make the best deal for the industry, but to help them in their way to a better industry. And so if it's legislation, rulemaking, lobbying, negotiating, we can do that because we represent a large number of organizations.
Yeah, and also in this case, it's very important to look for this kind of collaborations or cooperation, because it won't work when you try to make it on your own.
No.
So especially not for the EU regulations. And I think, as you said, especially for the EPR, the extended producer responsibility, just for the listener,
sorry,
because they don't know EPR. I think not only for this regulation, but also for the other regulation, also for the eco-design regulation, mm-hmm. I think the focus was mostly on the fashion, but
yeah.
not on the business textiles.
Right. Yeah.
So somebody was sitting there and was not really thinking about this. So this is now the problem, I think, that they really ignore the business textiles and focused on standard for the fashions.
Yeah, well, it's the mainstream of textiles in Europe is fashion. The influx, the outflux, the recycling industry, they're mainly dealing with fashion. So it's not so strange that they focus on it. But once you put these law into working, you have to make sure that the companies who are willing to comply are able to comply in the best possible way. And if you put these demands that you put on fashion and you want to have the same demands for the business textile industry, it's not going to work and it's going to be a failure. So modify, adapt it, and get the most out of this law that is possible and advisable. And we try as Cibutex, as a representative of a large number of companies in this industry, we have a voice in national levels and European level.
Yeah, that's really good. And yeah, let's see how it will work out in Germany. So they also need to work on the system. But I'm also asking myself, so why, or maybe they do this in the background. I don't know. Maybe they talk already to the Netherlands and to France, how they are doing this. Because if it already works there, then we can also use this as a blueprint for Germany. So we don't need to build up a complete new story out of it. So could learn from each other as well. So there should work a cooperation also in this way. So
yeah, that's good. Very well be done. We're very much open to it. And we have very good connection to DTV, but also to the textile industry in Turkey, for example, which is a big country in this respect. Already they reach out and say, can we talk about how can we set up a recycling industry and how should we do, where should we start and who should we include? And what are the major pitfalls and the major breakthroughs that we can... So we have a lot of information and a lot of experience in our member pool. And we are willing, very happy to share that. Same with the guy in Australia. So we have the contact there. He has the contacts in the country. So it's if you have a blueprint, if you have some good ideas and some good principles, it's a very good idea to export them to other countries. Each country has their own difference from the main idea. So you can fine-tune it to each country. But the basic idea, we have a lot of information on that. And we really, really like to share it with other countries, with the let's say, the DTVs of other countries, of course.
Yeah, let's see. Maybe somebody is listening to the podcast from another country and they
Please
can
reach
contact
out. Yeah.
you. So I will let the notes as well in the show notes so they can get in contact with you for sure as well. And Eli, I have to look at the time a little bit.
Okay.
Actually you are still, or Cibotex is still quite young. I think 2022.
Yeah, 3 years.
Founded.
Yeah, 2022. Yeah.
So, but you have already done or managed a lot, and you have already received a lot of milestones. So, what is your most wishful vision for the next 5 to 10 years? What would you like to achieve with Cibotex, and what is your biggest wish for the textile industry as well?
Well, the wish for the industry, of course, is that they can make the breakthrough to a circular industry. That it's really, and we see a lot of good developments, both technical and political, in spite of all the rumor that's going on in many countries, and maybe it feels like we're losing sight of what we're doing to the environment. Really, if you look closely, there's a lot of initiatives and a lot of things going on that are moving in the right direction. So we really have confidence in that. Of course, we want to more and more companies to join Cibotex so our voice can be stronger and louder in these decisive bodies like the European Union and the national associations in all the countries. And finally, I would really like to make work of this what we call the blueprint for other countries. So we should, and we haven't done that yet, make a starter kit for a country. Okay, you wanna create a good legislation for textiles in your country? Start with this package and we'll come and help you. But that needs some work, but that is good. It's always evolving, and those are the things we'll be working on for the next couple of years.
Connecting, this is also important. Starter kit sounds good.
Yeah.
Kit for the different countries.
What's also typical for Cibotex, we do stuff. We pick up the pilot projects, we organize events, we send out information, we create workshops and online lectures. We're not waiting around until the whole transition is finished. We want to be part of it. We are shaping and driving the transition. That's our main goal. And for that, we want to be active. Concrete actions, concrete results. And yes, if things don't go as we planned, fine, we'll use that information for the next round. And we're on the right way.
Yeah, it sounds really good. And what really interesting, Eli. So I hope the listener outside, they would love to hear this episode as well. So although it's a different topic than besides the normal textile production.
Of course.
It's the future, actually. And we have to find the way, because on the one hand, we are still producing textiles, which is still necessary. But on the other hand, we also need to find a way, what we are doing at the end with those textiles.
Yeah. And, we're still producing textiles. And I understand your usual topics are about textile production, maybe the technical sides of it or the commercial sides of it. And you should keep doing that. But we have to, while we keep doing it, we have to change the direction, the way things are happening and where everything is going. If we can do that, everybody can keep making textiles, but in a responsible way, a way that has the future. If we don't do that, there will be a very sudden end to this production, and problems will be bigger than we can imagine. So it's better to solve the problems that we're not facing full force today, but be prepared to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Eli, thank you very much for this very interesting, detailed interview. So, and we got it in English.
Well done.
Yeah, for you too. And thanks a lot again, and hope we will meet us soon again. We met us in February in Berlin. You remember at this Sweden
embassy. Thing. Yeah, I remember that.
So maybe we will meet us next year as well in person.
Let's Lovely. See. Yeah, look forward to that.
And then I wish you a nice day, and thank you again for your time.
Thanks for the invitation. and talk soon. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Das war's für heute mit einer neuen Episode von Fair Fashion Talk. Ich hoffe, du konntest etwas Neues mitnehmen und bist inspiriert, deinen eigenen Beitrag zu einer nachhaltigeren Zukunft zu leisten. Unser Gespräch hat einmal mehr gezeigt, wie dringend wir einen kollektiven Übergang zu einer echten Kreislaufwirtschaft brauchen. Es geht nicht nur darum, den Wandel zu erkennen, sondern ihn aktiv zu gestalten und mutig voranzutreiben. Initiativen wie MaxTex und Cibutex setzen genau hier an. Sie bündeln Kräfte, schaffen eine lautere und stärkere gemeinsame Stimme und machen deutlich, wie wichtig Zusammenarbeit für die Zukunft der Textilbranche ist. Diese Art von Kooperation ist ein entscheidender Schritt, um nachhaltige Veränderungen nicht nur zu denken, sondern auch umzusetzen. Auch dein Feedback ist mir sehr wichtig und ich freue mich, wenn du deine Gedanken in den Kommentaren teilst oder den Podcast bewertest. Das hilft mir dabei, den Podcast weiter zu verbessern und mehr Menschen zu erreichen. Alle wichtigen Infos findest du wie immer in den Shownotes. Wenn dir diese Folge gefallen hat, teile den Podcast in deinen sozialen Netzwerken. Gemeinsam können wir noch mehr Menschen für die Themen Fair Fashion und Nachhaltigkeit begeistern. Danke, dass du dabei warst, bleib dran und bis zur nächsten Folge.